to focus, just to persevere and just to make it. But everything that's within your grasp, you gotta take it, you gotta go harder. Just dig deeper inside you to find that method, that mode that wants that hunger to survive. Just to ride the grind and take it the way you gotta take it and never stop.
I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. I came to win, yeah, I came to win. Can't no one stop me, yeah, bring it in. I came to win, yeah, I came to win.
What's going on, everybody? This is Kyle Hunter, and I'd like to welcome you back to the Diagnosis Success Podcast, where we talk about motivation, inspiration, dedication, and as always, this is high-level conversation, and I just want to welcome you guys back to the podcast. The following has grown to just, the numbers are crazy, so we really appreciate you guys, all the listeners out there, and you know, if you know someone that's not actively listening to the podcast, definitely give them the word to subscribe, and they can check us out. But today on the podcast, we have a phenomenal, dynamic guest that is with us today. And this is a person that I've known for quite some time now. She is a businesswoman. She is a mother. She is a wife. She is co-founder of music licensing company Audio Socket. And she is also the CEO. And we are talking about none other than Jen Anderson Miller. How's it going on, Jen?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing great. We're happy to have you on the podcast today.
That was an amazing intro. Thank you. I'm gonna take you more places.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, I've known you for so long, and you know, this podcast is all about just promoting dynamic people. And you know, you're definitely one of the people that has had a positive impact on my life, because I always say, if it wasn't for you guys at Audio Socket, I never would have gotten the music licensing, you know. So for the people out there that are listening, this is the company that got my start in the music licensing space and made it familiar to me. So, you know, this is going to be a really great interview, and we're happy to have you.
I'm excited to be here. And yeah, it's been such a great relationship over the years. We love your work.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys. So we're going to get started, Jen. You know, on the podcast, what we normally like to do is, we know, like, for most people, you don't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. So for the listeners that might not be familiar with you, can you just talk about your beginnings, like what was life like growing up, and pretty much, you know, what that looked like during like your formative years before you transition?
Sure. So I grew up in Colorado, right on the Front Range. I was honestly a little mountain girl. My goal when I was a kid was to climb all 54 14,000 foot peaks. Very into extreme sports. And I think I had a really normal growing up. I mean, you know, ran around barefoot all the time, played in the dark until my mom called me in. Old school in the sense that I didn't grow up with, you know, a cell phone and all the devices. And so that was really awesome. But yeah, so just started in Colorado and loved music since the time I can remember. My dad had one of those like really huge turntables, and I would put on his ginormous headphones and listen to everything he had. His vinyl was anything from Vivaldi to, you know, the Carpenters, Paul Simon, the Beatles. And yeah, so I guess that's kind of where I got my start, was just the love for music.
Wow. That, you know, and that's interesting too, because it's like, you know, normally most people I know, like especially musicians or just people in the business, it always starts off young. Like, you know, music is something that we just grow up with, and you know, it's just something that we just love, and that passion just kind of just grows from that point. So yeah, I could definitely see how that was fostered from a young age. Now, as far as the transition into music licensing, because I realize, like, when people think about music, if you're not familiar with music licensing, it's not really a thing unless it's on your radar. Like, people take it for granted. They'll watch television, they'll watch movies, and I'm sure they're cognizant of the music, but they don't realize that that's an entire industry within itself. So as far as like the music licensing space, can you discuss, how did you get started in music licensing, and pretty much just, you know, how Audio Socket came to be, like all of those beginning stages?
Yeah, so that it's actually a really fun story, because I was working in action and extreme sports, and this is in my 20s, and I was in clubs all the time going out and seeing bands. Because people knew that I was very into kind of just emerging artists and talent, I started getting asked to find music for extreme sports videos like snowboard, surf, ski, skate. And it was because they were having such a hard time licensing music. So when I immediately was like, yeah, I'd love to. And I started out trying to clear, not even, it wasn't that famous of content, but anything that was repped by labels, publishers, it was so difficult to clear that music. And so I, through that experience, I kind of started like thinking about how could this be different and looking at the stock photo model. And so I wanted to do that. I wanted to streamline the music licensing process to make it easy for anybody that wanted to license music. And I wanted to do it with indie artists and bands. One, because they control their rights for the most part. Mm-hmm. And two, because there was just, I mean, this was like the digital era in its beginning and its infancy. And so there was just such a huge opportunity there. So I actually met, somebody knew I wanted to do this, and they introduced me to Brent McCrossan, who's my business partner in AudioSocket. And he was a talent booker in Seattle. Okay. So he would call me when he had bands coming through that he was like, oh, these guys are amazing. You got to come down and meet with them. So he would call me down to the venues. I would go down there, like just kind of drop of a hat and talk to these bands and artists and talk to them about what we were doing. And we started signing up artists through venues, basically. Mm-hmm. And then built a technology platform, and it all went from there about 12 years ago.
Wow. Wow. That's dynamic. And, you know, I love the organic component of it, how, you know, it just seems like to me a lot of times, like business models like AudioSocket, they're very successful because it wasn't a forced thing. Like, I feel that things that just flow naturally, like just in terms of just, all right, it's organic. We're trying to do this because there's a need for it. Like, people need music, but, you know, I know like those record labels, a lot of times they'll charge a lot of money just to use a song. So, you know, but you don't want to sacrifice the quality as well. So a lot of those, I call them like those music outlets where it's like, you know, you can get music for relatively cheap. A lot of the quality wasn't great. So the fact that you guys found really talented bands, that spoke volume, you know? Yeah. So that's really dope. Really yeah. dope.
And part of what we were always trying to do is really set ourselves apart from stock music libraries. Mm-hmm. And all music has its place, and stock music has played a huge role in film and TV. But I think for us, our goal, we set out to represent touring bands and artists, people that weren't necessarily just creating content for film and TV, people that were out doing this for a living.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Definitely. Definitely. Well, I mean, you know, the proof is in the pudding. You know, I mean, it's a phenomenal company. Phenomenal. Another question that I had for you, being a CEO, I'm certain that you've had several obstacles to overcome. You know, and sometimes we like to discuss the obstacles because a lot of times things are so glossed over, especially with social media now. It's like everyone highlights their successes, but they don't talk about losses. And I think that's important too, because it shows people a human component and how you're able to overcome those obstacles. So being in that position, can you talk about maybe some challenges that you did face and how you were able to overcome those obstacles in the business world?
How long do you have?
long as you need.
I might need therapy after all of that. No, I would say starting a business, every year I have major obstacles. There's always something, and I just feel like I grow into a new skin every time. But I would say one of the early ones, just because it is something that I think a lot of people get caught up with in one form or another, was our tech. So once we had signed bands, we were really excited about that, but then we needed a way for people to quickly search the music and check out the licenses. So we hired a company, paid what we thought was a ton of money. I've learned since it's not a ton, but, you know, it was everything for us, and the tech didn't work. Basically it was just really, really painfully slow. And every track we added made it that much slower. And so we had just invested, kind of everything into this player tech, and then it just wasn't working. And so we ended up having to literally start from the ground up. I called a great friend who now is a director of engineering over at Adobe, and he sent me a couple of guys who were just like our saviors in that moment. And within about 2 months, they had rebuilt everything for us, wow. Which is amazing. I mean, just kind of young engineers in Seattle, you know, just really went to bat for us. But it was very crippling at the time. I mean, we thought we were off to the races, you know, we were really needed to be making money immediately. And the way to make money was people could find your music and they weren't. And so, yeah, it was terrifying and really difficult. And I knew nothing about tech. And so to be in control of something and have no understanding of how it all works was a huge obstacle. I guess the great thing now is I know a ton about tech. I can talk the language. I understand what to expect now, but it was very disappointing. Almost put us out of business before we even really ever got started.
Oh, wow.
Just because we had invested everything. And so it just felt really, it just felt like we had lost everything. But fortunately, we got things standing back up. And like I said, and now I have come to kind of like learn to brush things off, figure it out. Like there's mm-hmm. always a solution to every problem. And so now I'm just always kind of seeking the solutions when I come to across the obstacles.
That's awesome. It's like Jay-Z said, brush the dirt off your shoulders, right? Like, you know, you can't let things get you down. And yeah, wow. The fact that you guys were able to bounce back from that and so quick, you know, to have that turnaround time of 2 months, that's phenomenal. That's a win, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, like I tell people a lot of times, I feel like there's no such thing as losses. It's only experience. So yeah. You learn. It's a constant learning process of what to do, what not to do. And it just makes you better. So that's phenomenal. That's really phenomenal. So, you know, one thing I want to ask you too, Jen, for me personally, AudioSocket is like a power player in the music licensing space. Like, I just feel that the quality of the placements that you guys get are like very, very high end. So interesting question I wanted to segue is, you know, can you discuss some of those placements that you are most proud of? Like, you know, some placements that you look and you say, wow, I'm glad that our company got that.
Yeah, it's an interesting question because I don't necessarily think of the biggest ones as the best. And I think I love certain placements for different reasons, if that makes sense. Of late, like, I love the Disney Plus promo. It's, well, we've done a number of them, but one of them that we did was just dynamic. It was just so fun. I my kids and I want to watch it all the time because it's one of those that it's just powerful and it draws you in and it's really exciting. I would say the movie trailers that we've been doing lately, those are huge accomplishments because that space is really, really hard to get into. And it is those are the kinds of placements as an artist I think anybody wants to get because they are such featured placements. And so getting the movie trailers that we've gotten in the past 2 years, Dark Waters, Knives Out, you know, The Hunters on Amazon. We did one for Soul, Disney's Soul. So that's been really exciting. And then I love the emotional pieces we do. We did one for HBO that was celebrating their Emmy nominations last year. So the 2020 Celebrate Emmys. And it's just very emotional and fun and fun and then actually really sentimental. And so that was really cool. And there's another one, it was actually probably 2 or 3 years ago that we did with WeWork for the refugee hiring initiative. And that one just makes you bawl. Like it's just really cool. The work that they did was exceptional on that.
Awesome. That's amazing. I mean, that's high quality work too. It's like, you know, these are like very, very, I would say just like, you know, very cohesive things. Like, you know, it's like the quality of it, meaning that, you know, you look at it and you can say, wow, you know, I'm proud of that, you know? So that's dynamic. Another question I had for you, in terms of like any musicians that are listening, because we got a lot of musicians that listen to this podcast, in addition to just people that want to do self-improvement. What advice would you give for a musician right now that's looking to get into music licensing and they don't know how? Like, what would be advice that you would give them?
It's an interesting space. It's changing a lot right now. I would say knowledge is power, and definitely do your homework. For AudioSocket, we accept auditions. We probably accept about 1% of what's submitted, and that's mainly because what we don't want to do is try to be what we take on. We want to make sure that it's what our clients are really asking us for, and we want to make sure that we're committed to the artists that we're accepting. So there was a period where I think we had to accept more just because we were building up the catalog, but now we're at the place where we have plenty of content, and so we're really selective, and we understand what our clients need. So to the degree that artists can research the companies that they're applying for and really understand where they thrive, like what is your bread and butter business, and understanding as well the way they're doing business, I would say they should really do their research. Do they want to be contributing where they get paid, you know, up front, and then they don't share in the sync? Or do they want to do like a revenue share model? Do they just want to, you know, make it available to anyone anywhere? There's a lot of companies popping up now that basically you kind of just put your music out there and people can license it. So it's more of just a tech vehicle, I guess. But understanding what kind of music you write and why it's going to sync, and then finding the right company that does that. Because a lot of companies do very different types of sync placements.
Right, right, definitely. And I think, like you said, knowledge is power. So Google is a powerful tool, like being able to Google a lot of companies, because I know musicians are very vocal. So we're expressive. So if they get with a licensing company, they don't like it, they're going to go online and they're going to write a review. Like, stay away, like avoid this company like the plague. Yeah. So, you know, it's good to do your due diligence, you know, like at the end of the day, like don't just jump in bed with company. Like I see a lot of artists, I think that's a mistake that they make too. They figure that if I can get with as many companies as possible, that I can increase my chances. And, you know, it's not necessarily the case, because a lot of times you can overexpose yourself. So if you have the same music, you know, that's in 10 different libraries, you could actually be underselling yourself, because, you know, if one library is trying to actually get you a decent payout for your money, but you have it in another library that's saying, well, you know, you can just get this song for $5, who are they going to go with, you know?
And that's a great point. And it's really one of the biggest struggles today for our company, is that there are a lot of these companies selling things for so cheap that it's really hard to actually like maintain the kinds of rates that we did for years and years, which were great. They were very fair rates. They were rates that artists could build a sustainable career on. And now we're just getting beat up over rates all the time. And so we try really hard. I mean, we are non-exclusive with one of our, we have two sides to our business. One is non-exclusive, but like you said, I mean, we've actually been asked to refund clients before where they found the same music much cheaper.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, just,
can
you
they
know,
do
I guess,
that though? Like if you pay for something, right, you purchase it. And then I don't know, because I'm just thinking about from a businessman standpoint, like if I have a burger stand and you buy a burger from Sparks Burgers, right?
Yeah.
You go down the street to Bob's Burgers and say, well, Bob's is selling them for 50 cents. I'm like, oh, ain't no refunds, man. What
right,
you talking
right.
About?
So, it's different when you, in licensing, you build relationships. Mm-hmm. And the hard thing is, I get it. I mean, I had this conversation on Friday with one of our great clients, and he said, the music is so much cheaper over here. Like, explain to me why are we paying more with AudioSocket? And I understand exactly what he's saying. And, you know, really what I always, the way I respond to people is, one, we do have an exclusive side of our business, and that music can't be found anywhere else. Mm. And it is exceptional music. So my hope is that people want it, and they do. They want it enough that they pay us what we ask for. But then as it relates to the non-exclusive music that they are finding elsewhere, it's really hard, because I can't make the business case that they should be working with AudioSocket if they can get it cheaper somewhere else. When you think about it, just boils down to business. So we've tried to work out a model where we do offer the kind of a YouTube freelancer small business subscription to just be in that game with a lot of the other businesses that have popped up doing that. Mm-hmm. But then anything that beyond web use and anything beyond small business use, you have to call AudioSocket and get a quote. And that's right, because we're trying to maintain the value where there's still money for music.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 110%. And I feel that for musicians too, it's important to know your worth. So if you're going to put yourself in a situation where you do have music in multiple catalogs, be very cognizant of what those catalogs represent and what that monetary return looks like for you, because you don't want to sell yourself short. So, you know, and I can talk from a personal vantage point of being a musician. I'm very selective where certain music goes so that it retains a certain value to say, all right, well, if you want this song, then you have to get it from this library that pays, you know, such and such, because that is the value that I see in what my music brings to the table. So, you know, yeah, that's a gem for a lot of artists out there. Know your worth. Don't undersell yourself, because at the end of the day, it's like, if you really want to sustain an income from music, be cognizant of that, you know, like that's important. Yeah. So another question that I had, because I, you know, I had to really think about this. I said, you know, I want to make sure I got the right questions here. So one that I have for you, everybody has a mantra, and we ask every guest on the show this, like, what is your mantra? Me personally, mine is persistence wears down resistance. That's been a mantra for my whole career. Regardless of the challenges or the obstacles that's in front of me, I don't view things as problems, they're opportunities, you know, to learn. So as far as you, what is a mantra that that you live by, something that motivates you, that constantly pushes you when there's challenges? Like, what does that look like for you?
I'd say there's kind of two. With our team, it's love and loyalty. And that's what we all talk about, is how does AudioSocket, in all of its interactions with its clients, with its artists, with each other, our team, how do we convey the love and loyalty that we feel for what we're doing? And just in general, love and loyalty are great principles to live by.
Course.
So I think we're always really just thriving to make sure that we're communicating that those are brand values of ours. As well, no is merely a challenge. Right. That's kind of one that I've held on to since the very beginning. I mean, you're going to be told no a lot. Mm. And if no beats you down, then, you know, it's going to be hard to get back up. So yeah. I always take no as a challenge. I'm like, okay, challenge accepted. What am I going to do to get in there? And I guess that kind of speaks to what you're saying about persistence.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. Love and loyalty, and no is merely a challenge. That's all. And it's true, you know, and I always tell people all the time, love is stronger than hate. Love is stronger than hate. You know, if you love something, if you're passionate about it, if you love someone, you're willing to put in the work, right? You know, and being loyal. Hate to me is just a fleeting emotion. It's like, all right, you hate something. Okay, that's cool. But love is stronger than that. So, you know, that's powerful. That's powerful. Let's see. What else did I have to ask you? You had a couple of things.
You're like, there's the alarm. We're done.
Yeah, that's the alarm. Like, what the heck? I got so many alarms going on here. So, all right. So what I wanted to ask you as well. Well, I want to circle back on one thing. For musicians, a lot of time trying to get into music licensing, a challenge that they have is like either to go through the music licensing library themselves or to try to actually contact music supervisors themselves. So what do you think is the best approach? Because I know that music supervisors, they're like low-key celebrities. So it's like, you know, they don't want randoms hitting them up, going in their DMs and all this stuff like that. And I know social media has given access to all these things. So what would you suggest in that regard?
It's interesting. So I was talking to, I don't know if you know Ari Herstan, but he's got a podcast as well.
Yeah, I know of Ari.
And he had asked this question, and I immediately obviously said, well, I think it's really good if you can work with an agency, because mostly music supervisors don't have time to listen to all the music that is always pitched to them. And a lot of people don't know how to pitch it to them. I think a lot of people just sort of are like putting it out there to as many music supervisors as they can. There's definitely an art and a craft to it, and understanding what music supervisors actually need and how they want the music delivered. I mean, there's platforms and usually they have their preferences. So I think finding a good sync agency is the best way to go. It was interesting though, because Ari said he had some success just pitching direct to music supervisors. So that was encouraging to hear. It's just not what I feel like I've typically heard. I think the success stories usually come from finding a good licensing partner to have really working that music for you.
That's very true. That's very true. Personally, I haven't met any musician that's had success trying to get a music supervisor. You know, like they curb them all the time. They're like, man, I go in their DMs, man. And I'm like, well, you know, they probably creeped out, you know, because they're getting like thousands. So, yeah, I agree with you 100%. Like, it's, you know, I think it's best to go through the music licensing libraries only because those relationships are already there. It's like a person that wants to work with me musically. If it comes from someone that's referred them, then I'm going to bump it up on the priority list to check it out, you know? So I agree with you 110% on that one. Yeah. Another question that I had for you is, if you had the power to change one thing about the music licensing business, what would it be and why?
Good questions.
Thank you.
I actually love this question because it's something I think about a lot. It's disappointing to me that at this point where the market has gone for music is you can go and look for photos or video or music, and you're going to pay less to license photos right now. And when I think about my camera and how many I can take in a minute, it is really disappointing to me that music can be licensed for cheaper than photos. So I'm not quite sure if that's just a movement that the music licensing space is behind. I mean, the photo licensing space is far more evolved than the music licensing space. And there's, you know, key players that really control that market. And so maybe that's what we need, is just that those anchors to really establish that these are the minimums, and that hasn't happened yet. But what I'm seeing is this trend of like people getting cheaper, 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 to where I just saw the launch like a week or two ago of this, you know, free to use. And I'm like, wait, what is happening? I'm like, musicians deserve sustainable careers, and it's not going to happen when it's free to use. And so I'm sure the idea is like, it's free and then they get you to pay along the way. But it just sets a precedent for what you should expect. And I think that the rates and some of these companies that allow you to license it for anything, I mean, you could be Nike and running a global commercial every week and still pay truly like the same amount that you're going to pay for like a dinner out. And that frustrates me. So I guess I would like to see that trend shift and change to where the minimums are still at a place where it's still affordable for the people who are doing things like YouTube, but the value is preserved at the higher end because there are budgets there. And I think, you know, like I said, the conversation I just recently had, the problem is when the model exists, of course, smart business people are going to say, but I can get it here for cheaper. But if there's some sort of like, you know, establishing of like, this is how much music costs, then I think we'll see a better outcome.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you 110%. It's, you know, you got to retain the value of the artistry. And granted, now we're in the streaming era, people are downloading, so people don't really retain the value of music as they should because it's so accessible, right? Like the consumption of music. So everyone's posting constantly. You can just log on to YouTube and you can play music. You can, you know, go streaming websites. So I think the value of the music in terms of like people actually paying for it is the issue, like you said. So hopefully, you know, with companies like yours that set the standard, and companies like mine as well, like, we value artists, we value their craft, and we value their ability to be able to sustain themselves with a decent income from music. So that's a great point. That's a great point. For all the musicians listening, definitely check out Audio Socket if you want to retain your value. So,
and to be clear, we do offer, like I said, kind of the YouTube license, and we get it. I mean, YouTube people often don't have any budget for music, and so that's where we've made the decision. We have like a $10 a month subscription for YouTubers. Mm-hmm. But then, like I said, as you get into something that's more than just web, and as you become more than just a small business, there's budget there, and that's where you need to talk to an agent.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think we've found the right kind of dichotomy and mix of, like, what do you want to streamline and just make easy, and give, you know, the 39 million channel producers on YouTube an opportunity to use music. Mm-hmm. But then you also want to make sure that, you know, you're asking for more when it comes to a company that's running a TV commercial.
Most definitely. I agree with you 110% on that. Another question that I have for you, and this is kind of like, I call it the Back to the Future question, where, you know, Marty had the DeLorean.
Love that movie.
Right, classic. So if you could go back in time and give your younger self a piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be, and why?
It would be focus. I think I'm easily distracted, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs are. We're sort of shiny object.
Yeah.
Like something comes along and you're like,
my life every day.
Yeah. So I think a friend of mine recently said, steady the course. Like, if you keep doing something, like, results are imminent. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good sort of business lesson in general, is just the idea that persistence will pay off, but you have to remain focused. We shifted gears many times throughout the last 12 years. And in certain occasions, it really hurt us to shift gears. In fact, I do believe that had we not shifted gears at one point, we potentially could have kind of helped set up that minimum. But as we were doing the shift of gears to the high-end film and TV side, paying less attention to the micro licensing side, which is actually where we got started. We got started in web and invented something called MaaS, music for as a service, and we were the first people to offer personal licenses online. But then when we shifted over, kind of really focusing on film and TV, we weren't paying as much attention to micro licensing. And I think that's where all these companies started to pop up that were charging so much less than, like I said, I feel like should be charged for music, and kind of doing blanket, unlimited, everything, anything under the sun. And I wish that we had set up a model that could have established sort of the lower end.
Gotcha. Yeah, definitely. I've seen, it's like companies are popping up every day. I saw a company where I couldn't believe it. Someone sent it to me and they was like, Kyle, you got to check this out. And I sent a link, and it's like a company offering in perpetuity, you pay a fee, an initial subscription fee, and it's forever. And I'm like, wow. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, you know, just, you know, talking about to be able to retain the value of music. Like, you know, I'm a businessman as well. I own a successful company. I get it. The, you know, you want the ROI to be great. However, you know, you and all the musicians out there, I just want to keep reinforcing this. Make sure you know your worth, and make sure that you're getting compensated properly for your craft. You know, like, that's important. You know, everybody wants to make a quick dollar, but all money ain't good money, you know. So that's you know, I mean, you know, it is what it is, but at least you're holding the fort down, and your company's holding the fort in that regard. So it's a great thing, you know. Yeah,
we're trying.
yeah no, you're doing great. We got two more questions left for you. So the next question is, where do you see the direction of music licensing headed within the next 10 years? And would you say it's a positive trajectory, or would you say that there are some concerns that you see on the horizon?
I think that plays right into what I just talked about. I do think sort of the online sync is what we're going to see more and more and more of. And I feel fairly certain there will be a roll up coming where a lot of these companies popping up day over day over day are going to get kind of rolled up into sort of some anchor tenants, let's call them. Mm-hmm. And I think that that space is going to be huge. And if you look at the photo space, it's the same thing. We're following the same evolutionary path, which means I think we will get to a place where, you know, a lot of maybe 90 or 95% of the licensing is going to get done digitally online like that. And I think the percent that doesn't is going to be where there's still, you know, labels and publishers. And so kind of the upper echelon will, I don't know that they'll ever be digital licensed because the rights are complex, but I think everything that's not sort of complex will go in this direction of online licensing. And like I said, my hope here, because there's a tremendous opportunity at scale. But again, back to what I've been saying consistently, that scale is the YouTube channels, the TikTok channels, the people on Twitch, and those people do need sort of that, you know, subscription for $10 a month just because they don't have budgets. They're streaming on Twitch and they need music, or they have a little YouTube channel. So I think the scalable opportunity is really for all of the user-generated content being created. Everywhere you go that you publish content, you do have to license that music, or you can get content ID claims and strikes, and they can take down the video or they can just pull the audio out. So I think there is that need and there's a tremendous opportunity there. Mm-hmm. However, like I said, my hope though is that that really gets fleshed out here in the next couple of years, where those markets get separated. And there's sort of the market for film and TV, and there's the market for micro licensing.
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. I agree with you 110%. And to have those markets distinguished, because I think that's the main thing too. It's like, all right, how do you distinguish like high quality music that's exclusive, and so naturally you'll pay a bit more, from just music that, you know, for people that just want to throw it on YouTube or whatever, because they're two different worlds. And I think what's happening right now is that people from a business vantage point, like you said, a lot of companies saying, well, why would I pay this when I can get this music over here? So I think the fact that your company, companies like my company, like we're distinguishing that line between high end quality, right? It's like if you want to go to, you know, a dynamic restaurant, right? You're going to pay a little bit more, right, for high-end food, because it's the total experience, as opposed to going to Wendy's and getting some chicken nuggets 2 for $5, right? It's like, you know, it's like, don't offend me in my business model to even compare me to these things. It's two different things, you know? So I totally agree with you on that. Totally agree with you. So, you know, in closing, the last question I have for you, what new and exciting things are on the horizon for AudioSoc? I know you guys are always doing dynamic stuff over there. So what's going on?
Yeah, well, as you know, because for your audience that doesn't know, like you said, we've worked together for many years, and we've done really well with your music. It's incredible. And so recently I called you and I asked you if you would be interested in working with us and like more of our in-house writing team. Mm-hmm. And so this is a collection of bands, artists, singer-songwriters, producers, composers. We have a guy from the Seattle Symphony coming together and collaborating. And it's really exciting. And the music coming out of it, I mean, the track of yours that we just placed on the Monster commercial.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, NBC epic. Sports, yeah.
Epic. Like, it's just phenomenal. I mean, it's next level, in my opinion. And so that's what I'm really excited about, is after all these years, it actually took COVID to do kind of see one of my dreams come true. And that is, I've met so many amazing artists over the years, and I've always kind of like thought, if I could get him with him and her with that guy and like put them together. And that's what's through COVID. We kind of brought these groups together, these artist groups together to create. And it took off. It's just, I mean, what's happening there is very exciting. So to me, that's the magic. I mean, the artists participating in these writing groups are just loving it. The music, like I said, I mean, you're on it, you're featured in it, so you know it's next level. And as we've been pitching it, clients are going nuts over it. And it's exclusive. Yeah. And so again, I mean, we don't run the risk of people being able to find it somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And so with that, we're also moving in a direction where we're doing digital distribution too. And so that music, we just kind of started rolling it out. We're getting really great traction with playlisting. And so we're going to start doing some of our own, basically Audio Socket Records is what we just launched. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be exciting to kind of cross over from just being a licensor to actually really being full cycle for the artists that we work with. And, you know, you made a point earlier, which is people go to Google and artists specifically want to see what the reputation of a company is. I don't think I look and I don't think you can find bad stuff about Audio Socket on any of the artist forums. I mean, we've always treated artists really well. We think of them as our partners in the business. And I think it makes sense for us to kind of go 360 as opposed to just, we do one thing for you. Yeah. So hopefully that'll be met with as much enthusiasm as the music has been met with by music supervisors.
That's awesome. And, you know, to piggyback off of what you said, those writing collectives that you guys put together are really dynamic, because the track that I did with Jim, it came out so phenomenal, you know, phenomenal. Yeah. So, you know, like I always say, collaboration is greater than competition. So being able to collaborate with like-minded people that actually have similar goals and just to see the outcome is amazing. So, you know, we'll definitely keep it locked for Audio Socket, all the great things that you got going on. And just thanks for taking the time and being on the podcast.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. And yeah, like I said, we love working with you, and anything you're doing, we're in.
Look, same here. It's a great relationship. So thanks a lot, Jen. And once again, this has been Kyle Hunter on the Diagnosis Success Podcast, and we appreciate you guys listening. And as always, this is High Level Conversation. You guys have an amazing, awesome, empowering week. Take care. So much that it seem wrong. Never gon' lose, that's my theme song. I just to kill any jeans on. Back to reality, ain't no one bad as me. See, they be doubting, but I keep on actually pushing. Not giving up, that's how I give it up. Pushing, not giving up, that's how I